My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us, especially after a very quiet week like this in Washington.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you weren't calling to discuss the weather, I take it, were you?
No, that's a whole other issue that I think everyone on both sides of the aisle is in agreement that this weather is pretty oppressive here at the end of the week, well over 100 degrees. But the biggest heat of the week politically was in reaction to the Supreme Court decision on Thursday. There's quite a bit of heat to Supreme Court decisions earlier in the week as well, which we'll get to. But when it comes to the president's health care plan, a little bit of a misdirection from the Chief Justice in his majority opinion, first announcing that it was unconstitutional as it relates to the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, leading multiple news organizations to declare the individual mandate was dead. But the Chief Justice comes back to say that, no, it survives because it is legitimate as a tax. So most people now, John, saying that this will ultimately be decided by the November election. If Obama's reelected, this will go in full freight. If Romney is elected, we'll see if he gets help from Congress or has to do what he can through executive orders. Is it that simple?
Certainly an argument can be made that Congress is the last vestige of hope for those who had wanted an all-out repeal of the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Yes, a lot of news organizations were reporting early that the Chief Justice had indeed voted with the majority and struck down the act. And interestingly, if he had just ceased his opinion at the point where he was saying it did indeed violate the Commerce Clause, that would have been a 5-4 opinion against the act, and not only the mandates in it, but just about every part of it. Congress would have had to have started from scratch. As it turned out, it is upheld. Now, the good side for opponents of the act is the Chief Justice said what the president has repeatedly denied in interviews and speeches, what his spokesman has denied, and that what was never really argued in the court case, that this is not a tax. It is not the equivalent of taxation or conscription, things that Congress requires Americans to do, whether they like it or not. And as a result, it is going to be a lot easier for Republicans to campaign for a repeal, or repeal and replace, as Mitt Romney says, of the controversial act in question. M. Stanton Evans, the author, once said that cutting taxes is the gold standard of American conservatism. Well, we'll see if that gold standard burns brightly and carries great currency this November. Certainly, this is going to be something that's going to be discussed by both the major candidates from now until the votes are cast.
Certainly the case. John, polls have shown since before this bill became a law and all the way through today that it is not popular. A majority oppose it. A majority certainly wanted, a strong majority wanted the individual mandate repealed, and a majority wanted the entire thing struck down. But now that the court has given it constitutional legitimacy, does that then perhaps make it slightly more palatable to at least some of those who had previously opposed the bill?
As a student of history, I have found that when people are presented with something as fait accompli, be it the Civil Rights Act, the Clean Water Act, or other things that have raged for years in campaigns and in Congress, they generally accept it. And there's a feeling they just don't want to deal with it anymore. That's the law. And sure enough, as we speak, I've just been given a poll that was reported today by my colleague at the White House, Donovan Slack. And sure enough, writing in Politico, she points out that a Gallup USA Today poll found Americans divided evenly, 46% to 46%, on whether they agree with the Supreme Court ruling.
John, let's move on to the Arizona ruling. Three out of the four components of the decision struck down provisions of the Arizona law, mainly those things that mirror federal law. And the court, led by Chief Justice Roberts, again saying that this is the pure and sole domain of the federal government, so the state cannot create its own laws, even if they are exactly the same as federal laws and enforce them. They will, however, allow police to request proof that folks are here legally if, in fact, they pull them over for unrelated offenses and suspect they are here illegally. Some, again, conservatives seeing this as a win on the most important thing. Others saying that, including Justice Scalia in his dissent, that this is once again an erosion of liberty.
Well, one can say it's an erosion of liberty when one finds that all but the most important component of the Arizona Law 1070 fell and were struck down by the justice's gavel. On the other hand, what the White House calls the show us your papers part of the law, the item that the president repeatedly cites his disagreement with in news conferences, was upheld. And as Governor Jan Brewer said, the state is going to continue to ask people for proof that they are American citizens, and if they are not, proceed accordingly. So in that sense, the law survives.
We're talking with John Gizzi of Human Events. John, let's move over to a couple of other things that happened this week. First of all, also on a very busy Thursday, Attorney General Eric Holder held in contempt of Congress by the full House of Representatives. The Oversight Committee did that last week. Democrats, many of them walked out, so the vote was more lopsided than it probably would have been, but Republicans had the votes to get it done. Significance of this, and will this actually lead to more revelations about what happened with the Fast and Furious program?
Well, it certainly has to, and the family of Brian Terry, the slain American agent, praised the action of Congress. Certainly the injection of race in this by Democratic House members, as well as the White House's claim that this is political posturing and a hunting expedition, are just not going to hold up. Eric Holder has yet to reveal the full papers from the Justice Department that deal with the Fast and Furious operation. Now, repeatedly, knowing full well the vote was going to go against the Attorney General, Democratic members of Congress said that this was an operation that began under the Bush administration and was ended by Eric Holder. Well, actually, it finally died under Eric Holder, but it actually had its birth and conclusion under George W. Bush's final Attorney General, Michael Mukasey. And it was an entirely different type of operation that the Mexican government knew about, and that did not include walking guns or dealing with bad characters, of which there are many in Mexico, as President Calderon has let us know. I think this is going to proceed, and there will be more evidence coming out. My bet that I'm saying right here with you, Greg Corumbus, is that the days of Eric Holder at the Justice Department are numbered, and one way or another, he won't be Attorney General by November.
That's a prediction with a specific time limit on there. John, let's get your thoughts briefly on some primaries that happened on Tuesday. Let's go first of all to Utah. It was just 2 years ago where a longtime incumbent, Bob Bennett, out there failed to even make it out of his own convention, didn't even make the primary, and lost his Senate seat within his own party. There were attempts, specifically by State Senator Dan Lillenquist, to do the same with six-term Republican incumbent Orrin Hatch. Did not happen. Hatch wins easily. Was this a matter of just being a different environment? Hatch learning the lessons of Bennett? What happened?
There's three factors. First of all, in contrast to Bob Bennett, Orrin Hatch went back to Utah frequently, certainly not every weekend, but a lot more than his former colleague. Rather than ignore those who were starting to carp and complain, he spent time with the Tea Party activists and local conservatives. Now, there are a few things about Orrin Hatch that annoyed conservatives, beginning with the fact he's been in office for 36 years and ending with the fact that he was an original co-sponsor of the first DREAM Act. Although the legislation that would give tuition breaks to the children of illegal immigrants is something he has long parted company with Democrats on. In the end, none of the conservative groups who worked to defeat Bennett did the same for Orrin Hatch except the Freedom Works groups. The others just decided that he was more good than bad and deserved what he said would be his final term. Voters agreed, and he won with 68% of the vote. And incidentally, should Republicans win the Senate, Orrin Hatch, as the most senior U.S. senator, will probably be elected president pro tem of the Senate, third away from the presidency.
That would be true if the Republicans have the majority. Dick Lugar was also elected that same year, but he lost his primary back in Indiana a few weeks ago, and so he will not be returning to Washington. So Hatch would definitely be the senior Republican, and barring a massive upset in Utah, that is not going to happen. So, John, we'll have to leave it there. We'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to being with you next week when we know the fate of Congressman Charles Rangel of New York.
Absolutely.
I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi of Human Events, a National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.